Shares. Market.
The S&P.
The ASX.
Stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that promises not to increase its interest rates anytime soon. I'm Scott Phillips, and with me is Anirban Mahanti. G'day, Doc.
G'day, Captain. How are you?
I'm very, very well, although if I had a mortgage, I do have a mortgage. It's a little bit more painful today. Let's get to that in a minute. So up and away, the banks pull the interest rate trigger. Back in your box, economic bears, I'll try to rant. It's not exactly a high horse, but the economy's in pretty good health, I think you'll find. And speaking of good health, we're going to talk about ASX valuations, which are, should we say, high, extreme, bubbly, Doc? What do you think?
Oh, people keep saying sort of, you know, those sort of things.
We'll have a look at that. We'll actually, also, specially and fittingly for the Triple M audience, we are thunderstruck with ACDC possibly listing on the ASX. Plus, you're going to get on your high horse and we'll see how that goes. I'm looking forward to this one because you give me a little bit of a hint and I like what I'm about to hear.
So I love high voltage.
Oh, there you go. A bit of high voltage rock and roll. We're not quite back in black, but we'll keep the puns rolling as we finish off the podcast. Mate, let's start with, if you're a bank shareholder, you're probably at least nonplussed. If you're not a bank shareholder and you have a mortgage, you're probably a little bit, we'll say annoyed to keep it PG. There's out of cycle rate increases going on right across the banking landscape. All of the banks over the last 2 weeks, except for at the time of recording, and maybe this will change by the time we finished, NAB, have all put up their interest rates. Everyone's going to be paying a little bit more for our mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
Mate, what is going on?
Well, my mortgage rates went up much before that. I'm with Bank
of Queensland. You're the wrong bank, dude. Exactly.
What's going on is basically the wholesale funding cost has gone up.
Okay, and to stop it. Wholesale funding.
Okay. So this is, the Australian banks, when they lend out money, they use money from the depositors, right? So depositors' money, which is essentially Australian money, let's say.
Well, the cost of that's not going up because I'm still getting 0.01% on my savings.
So the cost of that is not going up. Let's say that covers 40% of the lending.
Okay.
The remaining, let's say 60% of the lending comes from other sources. So where the banks are going to basically borrow from what they call the wholesale money market, right? Typically, that might mean, borrowing some locally, borrowing overseas, right? And if the interest rates overseas go up, the cost of borrowing that money also goes up. And we've talked about this before in the podcast, where essentially we have said that the U.S. interest rates have been, or the U.S. Federal Reserve interest rate has been going up.
Mm-hmm.
It's now higher than the Australian interest rate.
Amazing, huh?
It's amazing, which basically means that the cost of borrowing money overseas has gone up.
Yep.
And the banks, essentially, I would say that actually the banks have been nice in a way. I mean, they've been.
I don't think anyone's ever said that, Doc. Well, don't walk down the street of people throwing things at you.
Well, I should be careful. Most Australian investors probably do own bank shares. So
that's true.
Through super funds or directly.
Yeah.
And these guys have essentially not increased the rate for 6 months, and they have essentially bared the cost.
So you're saying they could have been justified in doing it earlier, but they finally lost all choice.
Yeah, I think there's talk that, banks are being unreasonable and so on. Well, but if the costs of doing business for them goes up, they have to pass on some of the costs. They're after all a business. They have to answer to a bunch of people, including shareholders. So, nothing. I wouldn't say this is not unreasonable, but this is expected. I would expect interest rates to go up even more over time. So, yeah.
Okay, so that's bad news for anyone listening with a mortgage.
Oh, well, it's bad news for me, for you.
both true. We're a little less happy now, but we kind of, I'll talk about me. I'm happy to bash banks pretty much any and every time I get the chance to when they've been unfair.
Yeah.
This is one I kind of feel, Scott Morrison kind of tried it last week, and I don't really think even he had his heart in it. It's kind of hard to say that this is anything but justified, right? For all things they do badly and wrong, and there's plenty of all of that stuff, including the fees for no service and charging dead people. This one is kind of one of those things where they're completely justified, right?
I think so. I mean, I think that, with the finance minister and the treasurer and the prime minister, they can say what they want. They're probably, they're saying things to keep the electorate happy, which is their job. But I think, as you said, it's pretty justifiable here. I mean, one could say that, maybe they should pay a little bit more on those deposits too. But if they paid a little bit more on those deposits, then they're, the the difference that they make, it right. goes down even more.
Well, the rates have gone up even further, right? Exactly. So you care for what you wish for.
So exactly. So if you wish for your deposits to go, deposit rates to go up, be willing to pay more for you know, loans you have. So I think on balance, I mean, you know, it's a fair call. I mean, it's not a huge raise. All of this between 14 basis points to what, like 17 or 18 basis points?
Give or take.
So,
and a basis point, so people know, is point something of a percent. So you technically, the maths boffins would tell us you can't say rates have gone up by 0.25% because the percentage increase in what you're paying isn't the same as the increase in the interest rate. So we talk about basis points to try and explain that it's the percentage number that goes up rather than your BPAM's going up by a certain amount in dollar terms.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Mate, speaking of percentages, speaking of dollar terms, you like that segue? That was seamless. Listeners are thinking, that Phillips, he should be on radio. He's that good.
But he is on radio.
Well, kind of. Well, not like Liam. Liam actually does the Rush Hour with MG. Yeah. Liam is calling the football on proper radio.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
We just get to use the studio that's empty at the moment is pretty much how this works.
We get kicked out when the studio's empty.
When real people have to come and do real radio.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's move him right along. Mate, the economy is in bloody good shape.
I know.
There's nothing that annoys me more than vested interests and people who've... You know the John Maynard Keynes quote, "When the facts change, I change my mind, what do you do?" There is so much of the commentary out there on Twitter and the newspapers, on radio and television, who keep saying, the economy's terrible. Yeah, there's this welter of massively great news, but if I pick out a single data point or the bloke I talk to at the fish and chip shop or the greengrocers, he said things are bad, therefore it's bad. Almost every piece of news about the economy is positive. The data is uniformly positive almost. And yet people are still clinging to this hopelessly outdated notion that the economy is doing badly. And we had GDP this week. And tell me what that said.
Well, the GDP was, we had GDP growth of what, like 3.4%? That's an astonishing number. I mean, here's the thing, right?
Like, just to be clear, if you ask someone outright, what would you want GDP to be healthy?
Yeah.
You'd say,
couple
high
percent,
twos,
you know,
low
high
threes,
two, you know, 2.5, you know.
3.5% almost.
It's like, you know, it's like a cracker.
Right. So,
and the interesting thing is that I think here's the problem, right? We haven't had a recession for like you know, maybe a decade. And therefore, people just think that
25 years, just quietly.
Oh, well, 25 years. Sorry. What was I thinking?
Huge.
Yeah, 25 years. What was I thinking? Yeah, 25 years, you know, like a quarter of a century.
Right, there are 43-year-olds who've never had a recession in their working lives.
Yeah. So therefore, it's very natural to think that, you know, something must be around the corner, right?
Right, I suppose.
Although there's no predictive power in the fact that we haven't had one, therefore there should be one, right? You know, there's no predictive power there. But, you know, the interesting thing about the GDP numbers, at least the one that, you know, came bubbled up to me, is that consumer spending was up.
Mate, I've seen people on Twitter all the time saying the RBA should cut rates. They've got to stimulate the economy. I say, on what bloody basis?
Exactly. Consumer spending is up.
It drives me mad. So, I will give a shout out to one economist I'm on Sky News with occasionally to give myself a plug, which is kind of bizarre. Stephen Roberts from Alexander Funds Management has been uniformly bullish on the economy when almost everybody has been negative. He points to the fact that not only is spending up, household income is up 6% year on year. So not individual income. We know that one of the laggards is wage rises. Not a lot of us are getting pay rises relatively commonly. It seems to be hard to come by.
Can I get one?
We'll talk about that afterwards. they seem to be hard to come by. Excuse me. But household income, in other words, more people are working and getting paid a lot more. Households are better off. They're spending more money. Businesses are better off. The tax coffers are better off. GDP is up. What the hell are people complaining about?
Yeah. Well, you know, we can always complain about things. I'll talk about a couple of niggles.
Come on.
Just to, you know, you're overly enthusiastic here. So, you know, let's just temper it down a bit.
Appropriately, I would have said.
Okay, appropriate. I agree. The results were really good. I think one complaint people had is, you know, wages are flat. That, if you combine that with interest rate increases and so on, that might have some impact over maybe the long term on consumer spending. But again, consumer spending is pretty healthy. I wouldn't be too concerned about anything here.
All right.
It's all very sunny and nice, and the beach is beautiful.
Now, of course, that doesn't mean bad things aren't coming down the pike, but we've got to keep things in perspective, is my general
point. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not going to keep going because I don't. This isn't my rant. I'll leave it there.
Okay.
I'll put on my best ABC newsreader voice and say, the economy appears, based on the data, to be doing reasonably well.
Very good.
All right.
Motley Fool Money. For more, go to fool.com.au/MMM.
Speaking very well, the telco sector. Can I get a seg out of that one? I don't think so. We talked last week or the week before about the Vodafone TPG merger. And at the time, we said it was likely or possible or maybe going to happen. So we did all that kind of good stuff. It's kind of now been, well, it hasn't kind of, it's been announced. The deal is going through. David Teo gets to walk away with a very nice chunk of change and a special dividend being paid. The current shareholders of TPG end up with just under half of the newly merged Vodafone TPG entity called TPG, with the current owners of Vodafone getting the lion's share of the business. And telco shares across the board went up on the news. Everything was going to be wonderful. All of a sudden, people were going to be more rational. It's been a week and a bit now. What do you make of the telco space in the wake of this, assuming it goes ahead, putative merger?
So, I mean, you know, as you said, in this deal, the TPG shareholders are going to own like, what, 49.9% of the business. And the Vodafone guys are going to own, you know, the remainder, which is like basically 0.2% more than the others.
Which makes all the difference in the legal world, because if you own half, you are, more than half, you are in control. Yeah.
So basically, they get to be in the driver's seat. We have talked about this before and many times, and you know, this was one of the, you know, it's a stock that we actually have recommended in multiple services. And I mean, it makes sense. There were synergies ahead of this deal, right? I mean, TPG provides the fiber connections to the Vodafone mobile towers. This is like, you know, so therefore combining the two makes sense, even just from an infrastructure point of view. And then, you know, TPG doesn't have to then go and spend money building its own network. You know, it can actually augment the already pretty good Vodafone network. I use Vodafone. It's okay most of the time. it's pretty good most of the time. And I think, so the, it's good. It creates a formidable force. You know, they're saying it's going to be the third force in telco. To me, it's almost like the second force in telco. I mean, behind Telstra. And I think, so, I mean, there's a lot of good things here. I mean, they could, you know, there could be some cost synergies, dangerous word synergy, but there could be lots of, you know, cost synergies. The thing is, what's going to happen, is this going to be TPG or this is going to be Vodafone? Is the entity actually going to, it's going to be called TPG, but is it Vodafone?
And here's the thing, TPG is such a stronger, more dominant business. It has the whip hand in this deal. In fact, TPG has to give back about $800 million in dividends to shareholders to make it small enough to be 49.9% of the deal. Otherwise, it would have been just over 50-something percent. So this is a very, very obviously structured deal, which does deliver Vodafone the majority share by kind of dint of corporate shenanigans in the background, the kind of the engineering that we talk about. This is structured very specifically for that purpose. Is TPG trying to get out? Is Vodafone trying to get in? I've always said that I always thought TPG would take over Vodafone. I thought we'd either kill it or take it over. This is structured like a Vodafone takeover of TPG, but only because of that $800 million worth of cash being paid back to shareholders.
So I also thought so, and I always thought that TPG is going to, you know, as I was, you know, I'm exactly, you know, in agreement with you. It looks to me that maybe David Thiel, and he is taking a little bit of a backseat here. He's not going to be the CEO anymore. He's going to be executive chairman, I think. So that's a change. And the Vodafone CEO is going to be the CEO. They have some, you know, in terms of board seats and so on, they have arrangements like that. This, to me, the way I look at this is like maybe Thiel's last, like, hurrah. He's basically saying, well, you know, I create a bigger empire. I ensure the future of TPG. The combined entity would have a long, you know, lasting future in this country. And maybe they can, you know, and in maybe in the due course of time, it, you know, Vodafone has got businesses in other parts of the world. Maybe there are opportunities there somehow. I understand they're structured differently, but maybe that's the deal. And maybe he wants to take a back seat. I mean, he has been, you know, doing this for, and he is taking a back seat, kind of. So, I mean,
he's giving up control.
He's giving up control.
This is a big, big deal for TPG.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it makes sense. I mean, if the combined entity is run well, it could, you know, if it retains some of those, you know, TPG genes in it, or DNA, should I say, then I think, it's going to be overall probably good for the consumers, you know, maybe competitive pricing and so on, and it's going to keep Telstra under check. So, I mean, I have mixed feelings about this, really, mixed feelings.
Bottom line,
Is TPG a buy, sell, or a hold for you at the current price, given the structure and given the deal that we know?
You know, TPG was always a buy for me because of Theo.
Right.
I mean, for me, Theo was a big deal, and the fact that he has so much shares and control. He is locked in with the shares for, I think, 2 years or something like that, post the deal.
Yeah, but 80% of his shares. He gets to sell 20% of them.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, but I mean, still, 80% is still a substantial
it's a lot
wealth.
Of money.
It's exactly. a lot of money. I would be cautious of buying TPG at this point. I mean, you know, there's a bit of uncertainty here. And the shares have run up a fair bit on the news, or had run up. I've not seen exactly what it has done. So I'd rate it as a hold. If I owned it, I wouldn't sell it.
Okay.
But I wouldn't be rushing to, like, buy more.
I completely agree. We actually downgraded it from buy to hold at ShareAdvisor recently, partly because of the uncertainty, partly because, as you've already mentioned, we liked TPG. We liked TO's TPG.
Yes.
We're not sure that we like the Vodafone TPG. So we'll just see what happens with the price and see what happens with the business and go from there.
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
Let's move across to, speaking of high prices and things having run up, let's talk about ASX valuations just very quickly. We can't do the whole thing justice, but I want to say, as a result of earnings season, there are some pretty nosebleed valuations. Now, you're a kind of a growth guy. You don't take a lot of heed to valuation, and yet I think even you might be able to see that there's some.
Yeah.
Do we call it a bubble? Can we call it that? Or do we call it overvaluation? Do we call it irrational exuberance? What do we call what's happening in the tech sector in particular?
So, I mean, you know, the tech sector has run up, and we've talked about this, you know, partly in the podcast before. I mean, one of the problems investors face is that if you have a sector that has got, you know, some interesting underlying characteristics would provide them, you know, some long-term opportunities, then, you know, eventually people start taking notice. And when people start taking notice, sort of the multiples get bid up, right? So that sort of happened. I would say that there are pockets of, you know, which appear to be overvaluation in the tech. But the other thing that I think the markets in general have problems is just thinking about long-term compounding, you know, possibilities, right? You know, if you can compound at, you know, 30% rate or 25% rate for like 10 years, that's huge, right? So that's effectively like doubling, you know, every 3 years kind of thing, right? So I think the tech sector can do that, but I do think that, you know, they look expensive. But again, some very good firms are in the tech sector overall. So, I mean, it's, you know, I guess what you need to do is separate sort of the wheat from the sort of the, you know, chaff.
Find that really hard, Matt. You've been more active in the tech space than I have as an investor, and that's probably appropriate. The one thing I'm pretty sure about, I think I've said this before, is that if you add up all of the expectations from all the investors in all these companies, someone's going to be disappointed almost by definition. Yeah. The market is not going to be big enough, I don't think, in tech and fintech in particular, to be able to absorb the optimism of everybody.
Yeah.
So almost by definition, there has to be losers. Such are the valuations now of some of these companies.
Yeah.
And it just worries me a little bit that, look, you know, you want to have a bit of risk in your portfolio, you want to take some chance, you want to back some winners. I think that's fair. I just think there's going to be a whole lot of disappointed people when the time comes to pay the piper.
That's true.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Liam Flanagan, hit us. Doc.
Yes.
Okay. It is your turn to join us in the starter's gates.
All right.
To mount your steed. And to salute the starter as you take off, hit us.
All right. Okay. So one of the fascinating things nowadays I find when I go to investor, I was actually at the ASX Small and Mid Cap Conference yesterday.
Okay.
And listening to the tech session, the one theme that was pretty consistent across the session was we are a recurring revenue business.
Which is great. You love recurring revenue, right? Software as a service, recurring revenue, that's all great.
Recurring revenue is great.
So you're going to tell us how good recurring revenue is now, right?
Recurring revenue is great, but here's the deal.
Oh, here we go.
Isn't Woolies recurring revenue? Everybody comes back to Woolies. You know, isn't Coles recurring revenue? Everybody comes back to Coles. Hey, Guzman Gomez is recurring too. People come back to have
burritos. Our favorite burrito shop.
People come back to have burritos. So just the fact that people come back doesn't make it recurring. I mean, there's this thing now that every business somehow wants to showcase that it is recurring, right? I mean, do you have contracts locked in? Do you really have contracts that can't be broken? You know,
podcast is revenue. I suppose. We're recurring.
We're recurring.
We do it every week.
We are a recurring podcast. So you know, the finer details, right? You know, do people pay you a year in advance mm-hmm. for the service you're going to provide, right? And how long is your contract? And you know, how tight is your contract? And mm-hmm. how many people are leaving those contracts? So those things matter. And then there are some businesses which are definitely, they're software businesses, but they're not recurring in any way. And it's just bizarre how, you know, management and folks, you know, just say, yeah, hey, this is recurring. And just to ride the recurring, you know, software as a service.
Surely not going to do it just because they want to get higher valuations.
Of course, why not? I mean, why wouldn't you not? So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a bit, you know, disingenuous mm-hmm. and, you know, but it's just the theme, and it ties in with the stuff that we were talking about, you know, ASX mm-hmm. darlings and so mm-hmm. on. So yeah, so be very wary. I tend to be, you know, very careful and you know, put my extra watching glasses on and my magnifying glasses on when somebody says, "Is it recurring?" Right? And you know, and let me just say that not all recurring revenue are the same or are equal. So just be careful.
So.
Do you want to add something to it?
I will leave it there, because okay. if I do try and add, I will probably go on my own high horse. And frankly, this horse isn't big enough for the two of us, Doc. You've whipped it with an inch of its life, and we probably should let it have a little bit of time off.
Okay.
We'll come back to it next week. In fact, it's my turn next week, so I want it to be nice and rested. So when I'm out the high horse, it's ready for a long and... I think, is that displeasure, Liam? Is that what you're telling me? Is that enough? All right. Fools, thank you very much for listening. That does wrap us up for this week. But before we go, don't forget you can subscribe, and you should, we think, to the Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast through iTunes or your favorite Android podcast app. And if you like what we're doing, give us 5 stars. As they say, if you love us, tell your friends. If you don't tell anybody.
Leave a review. Good review. Lovely review.
And don't forget, you can get a dose of foolishness straight to your inbox by going to fool.com.au/Triple M. That's it for this week's Motley Fool Money. We'll be back next week with another dose of foolish insight. Fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.